today we're going to talk about the best way to lower triglycerides. I'm Dr. Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health. So today we have a question from Sasha. We're going to, as you said, we're going to talk about triglycerides. Now she says in the question, or actually, why don't you go ahead and you always read the question.
It's short. Sasha. It's really sweet. So this is from Sasha. I know this isn't a hormone question, but was hoping you could give me some direction. I was wondering what is the best way to lower triglycerides? Thank you for your help.
A little technicality here. Technically, this is a hormone question. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a female hormone question, right? It's not about estrogen, progesterone, or, you know, testosterone or anything like that. But triglycerides or elevated triglycerides definitely is an insulin issue, which is still technically a hormone. So from our standpoint, this would still qualify as being a hormonal question for sure. Just not the typical perimenopausal, menopausal, female hormone related question or hormone question. Although women in their 40s and 50s are dealing with, you know, metabolic issues. So I think this one is very appropriate.
So now triglycerides are part of your cholesterol panel. So when you go to the doc and they run a cholesterol panel, or the fancy word for it is lipid panel. In fact, I had a patient just write me because I'd ordered a lipid panel for her and she asked me, I don't see cholesterol on there. I'm like, lipid panel is a fancy word for cholesterol. Yeah, yeah. But you'll have your total cholesterol, and then below that we'll have your triglycerides, and you'll have your high-density lipoproteins, the HDLs, which are technically the good cholesterol, so the higher the better for the HDLs. Then you can have your low-density lipoproteins, the LDLs, so the lower the better. They kind of call that the lousy. But cholesterol, you got to have cholesterol. You can have too low a cholesterol. But so mostly when you're looking at the triglycerides, that would be under a cholesterol panel with your total cholesterol, your triglycerides, your HDLs, your LDLs, and some other panels will have the VLDLs, the very low-density lipoproteins. So some people can have high LDLs, high triglycerides. So what Sasha's asking here is about her triglycerides.
Yeah. So when you look at a typical, now granted, we're not cardiologists. We don't, we deal with a lot of cardiovascular issues just sort of in general. And plus the population we'll deal with, they're all very concerned about cardiovascular issues. But you sort of have to know how to interpret the lab panel or the lipid panel for sort of, you know, it's not just if your total is elevated, your LDL is elevated, you're at risk. It's not really quite that simple. I personally think that the LDL to some extent is important. That's, I won't disagree with that, but more so about ApoB, okay, which is a new thing. Dr. Atiyah talks about that. There's a bunch of other doctors talking about ApoB. It should be part of, honestly, it should be added to a lipid panel, right? Because there is some correlation between ApoB and being a really good predictor of cardiovascular events. However, as a simple, every doctor is going to do a lipid panel, right? That's why we run them, because you can tell simply by someone's triglycerides. I tell patients all the time, a lot of doctors don't run fasting insulin levels, but they all run lipid panels, right? So a simple way to see where someone's metabolic health is looking at their triglyceride level. The higher their triglyceride, the higher their insulin is. So even if you don't know what their insulin is, if their triglycerides are above 150, reference range is 0 to 149, if their triglycerides are greater than 150, then you know that they have some early stage of either insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome.
So now you had mentioned, you know, talking about the lipid panel that, and talking about cardiology and heart health. Yeah. So this is where I already know, but I want to kind of bring this up for the listener and the watcher, is your lipid panel is supposed to technically be something that's looking at cardiovascular health, but truly I feel like triglycerides are really more about possible diabetes or blood sugar issues.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because the correlation, the positive correlation between insulin and triglycerides, the higher your insulin, the higher your triglycerides are going to be. Now, how does that make any sense? Well, triglycerides are technically is what they call a blood fat, right? When you eat a higher carbohydrate diet, this, you know, the typical standard American diet, your body only has so much room to store carbohydrates as energy. It's called glycogen. Your body can store it. I know you know all that, but your body can store it in the liver. It can store it in your muscles, but there's only a finite amount of that glycogen that your body can store. When those glycogen stores are full, then your body will take carbohydrates in the diet and then convert them into triglycerides, which then gets transported in your blood and then deposited in your, you know, fat tissue or what's called your adipose tissue. So that's why we can assume that the higher the blood fat concentration, the higher the triglycerides, that means then there's more insulin because that happens in the presence of insulin. If you have low insulin, then your triglycerides go down. So if you're on a lower carbohydrate diet, even let's say kind of an extreme example that I've seen quite a few times, like say the carnivore diet. No, I'm not promoting the carnivore diet right now. It works for some, it doesn't work for all. I think in some cases it can be highly effective, at addressing certain things. But one thing you'll notice in the early stage of that is that their total cholesterol goes up, their LDLs sometimes go up, their triglycerides go down, and their HDLs increase. Okay, that's the shift you want to have happen in someone who's becoming more metabolically healthy. Triglycerides go down, HDLs go up. The opposite of that happens when someone's becoming metabolically unhealthy. The triglycerides go up and the HDLs go down. The total will probably go up as well. The LDLs will probably go up as well.
So when someone has high triglycerides and let's say low HDLs, that puts them at a risk for what?
Well, everything, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, cancer, and we could probably even throw fatty liver in there. Fatty liver sometimes is the starting point, right? Fatty liver, weight gain, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, cancer.
And you were saying before to cause triglycerides to come up would be foods that would raise up insulin like sugar.
Yeah. Sugar, refined carbohydrates, breads, cakes, cookies, crackers, pasta, all the yummy foods that we all love to eat. Those are the things that are going to contribute, which why it's sort of on the surface doesn't make a lot of sense that triglycerides increase your blood fat, your triglycerides lowering those foods. So you don't want to cut away the red meat or something like that necessarily. That's not going to have necessarily a positive impact on your cholesterol levels.
Or the triglycerides
for that matter. And the total cholesterol, and again, I learned this from Dr. Atiyah and some other doctors as well, that the total really doesn't have a lot of a very good correlation with cardiovascular events, stroke or heart attack. So we can't look at total. And there's even some research to suggest that by having too low of a total cholesterol, mm-hmm. you're setting yourself up for certain types of cancers, yeah. Right? So triglycerides, I think on a standard, physical once a year blood work, I think the triglycerides on a, not the ones that we run because we add some other tests in there. But what your primary care doctor is typically going to look at, I think the triglycerides is one of the more important tests on the entire panel.
So for example, I had a patient the other week and her triglycerides were really high and she was freaked out.
What's really high?
I think they were in their 300s.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I know her family. I know it does run partly in the family. But her concern was, oh my gosh, am I going to have a heart attack right now?
Yeah, right. I don't think it's that triglycerides don't have that direct of a correlation for cardiovascular risk. Metabolic health, yes, like we're talking about, but you don't know.
Maybe explain metabolic health.
That's a good question, right? So we use that term a lot, and what does that actually mean? Well, let's use diabetes as an example, right? So in some ways, diabetes is this is where we're going to kind of get down the rabbit's hole for a second. So diabetes is where your mitochondria are sort of overburdened, right? Your mitochondria is where all the food that we eat sort of gets processed from carbs, fats, and proteins, and your body absorbs that. Your cells turn that energy, let's use carbohydrates for the most part, carbohydrates gets turned into glucose, right? And that gets processed or assimilated or metabolized through your mitochondria. When there's a lot of glucose coming in on a regular basis, meaning that we're eating a high refined carbohydrate diet in whatever form that might be, those mitochondria get overburdened. There's a lot of talk these days online and social media about mitochondrial function. When the mitochondria gets overburdened, now it starts to break down, okay? That's when you get feeling tired. That's when your blood sugar starts to rise, your insulin starts to go up, your triglycerides go up. Now, triglycerides go up acutely based on the foods we eat, right? So yeah, that can happen in the short term. But when you're doing it fasted, you eat a certain meal, your triglycerides are going to go right up, right? That's why your doctor always tells you to go to the lab fasted for these types of things, because they do fluctuate based on food. Mm-hmm. So you want to be somewhat fasted. So if you're seeing those numbers elevated in a fasted state, that's a clue that all that stuff that I was talking about on the mitochondrial side is starting to happen. So it's just a little bit of a, you know, a little, a clue that there's, you know, there's some issues there. You know, you're right. I've seen triglycerides anywhere from 150 to 4,000, right? You know, 4,000, let's say in an acute diabetic diagnosis or something, someone's got uncontrolled blood sugars.
I've never seen triglycerides at 4,000.
I saw one patient a long time ago, triglycerides were 4,000, but they are like a brand new, you know, a type 2 diabetic diagnosed within a matter of a few weeks, or that led to the diagnosis because there was uncontrolled blood sugars were, you know, 350, 400. Now we were able to get them to come down, right? We were able to get them, it took a while, but able to get them closer to, a normal range, which normal range for a triglycerides is less than 150.
So like you're saying about metabolic health. So if you have good metabolic health, your energy is going to be good. You're not going to be so easily to gain weight, right? Low metabolic health, easy to gain weight.
Lots of discussion about weight loss these days for sure. Yep.
Good metabolic health means that your insulin and your blood sugars are being nicely balanced. Mm-hmm. So it's reducing down your risk for inflammatory conditions or inflammatory diseases.
Yeah, well, like I said, the big ones, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, and cancer, those four things, everyone in America is sort of trying not to develop those things. That's why those are all sort of preventable, regardless of mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, and regardless of the, you know, family history. These are sort of lifestyle diseases. So if you start to see triglycerides creeping up, and what I've noticed over the years, and I'm sure a lot of other doctors do as well, that those triglycerides will be probably relatively, I like to see triglycerides reference range 0 to 149. Mm-hmm. I like to see them less than 75.
Usually I like them under 100. If you can get it under 100, you're doing pretty darn good.
So under 100, so it's in the double digits, not in the triple digits. So 99 or less, mm-hmm. I think that's reasonable. 75, half the reference range. Once you're crossing over that triple digit mark and you're, you know, even at 121, 132, it's too close to 150. That is already an indicator that there's some early signs of, you know, poor metabolic health or insulin resistance. And that's just going to increase your, now granted that changes once a woman goes into menopause, right? That's why this is relevant when we're talking about women in their 40s and 50s, because, you know, as those female hormones are declining, women become more more sensitive to, you know, cortisol stress. They become more insulin resistant. That's why we weigh more when we're 55 than we do when we're 25, partially because of how our body's responding hormonally. And now you start to see these risk factors start to, they call modifiable risk factors, start to go up.
And we know, and I think we talked about this on another podcast, that estrogen has a huge impact on cholesterol. Yeah. Once your estrogen drops going through menopause, that's when you start to see the cholesterol go up.
Right. Now, I know you know this, so I'm preaching to the choir here, but one thing you'll see in women that is their kind of secret weapon against it is at least cardiovascular disease anyways. That's why women don't have as much heart issues or stroke issues under the age of 55, where men are having heart attacks, not that often, but quite often. If someone's under the age of 55, it's going to be male versus female. Mm-hmm. Over the age of 55 is where the risk sort of, you know, starts to, women sort of catch up a little bit, but still, I don't think they have nearly the risk as men do around the same age frame. Partially that's related to their HDL levels. So you'll see, I mean, what's the highest HDL level that you've seen in a woman?
I saw a patient up in, I think it was like 128 or 132, mm-hmm. So which was amazing. I mean, any HDL over 90 is out of this world. actually over 70. Is really, really good. So of course, if you have good HDLs, the higher the better, that's going to make your total look falsely elevated. Right. So like you said, don't look at the total, look at the actual, triglycerides, low density lipoproteins, the HDLs especially, and then even those VLDLs.
Yeah. You think of that's why we call HDLs the protective cholesterol. In some ways we want that number, you know, the higher, the better. Now I asked you that question. So the highest I've ever seen, it was in the same woman, the lowest triglyceride and the highest HDL was in the same woman. Her triglycerides were 32, 31. And her HDL is 135.
So what created that?
Well, that particular woman actually was on the carnivore diet. Mm-hmm. Her total cholesterol was quite high. Her primary care was sort of freaking out a little bit. Her LDLs were pretty high. Now, granted, that's sort of a consequence for some people. And I know there's some, epigenetics going on there. Like some, they just, their totals kind of skyrocket. It's sort of a common occurrence. They can eat a little bit of carbohydrate, like maybe in a little bit of fruit, certain things, and it'll actually lower those numbers. But the triglycerides and the HDL tend to stay in a good spot. So you want as low a triglyceride as possible and a high HDL as possible. And honestly, with every patient, I will do a little, just a simple calculation. If you have any labs at home, you can do it yourself. You take your triglycerides divided by your HDL. Okay, so give me two numbers and we'll just do the math right here while we're talking.
Okay, triglycerides 50.
Okay, so triglyceride, that's a really good triglyceride 50.
And let's say HDL is 50.
Okay, let's see. So the math, yes, thank God. I don't have to get my calculator out and have to, do the math. So 50 divided by 50, we know that would equal 1, yeah. Right?
So now, try 100 for their triglycerides and 50 for the HDLs.
Yeah, so that's actually a better way to do it.
So you can compare those
two. Right, and those numbers are actually fairly, common, right? So 100 triglyceride, okay, divided by 50 on the HDL would give you a ratio of 2. Okay, now this is something I learned from a scientist, a crush of mine, Dr. Ben Bickman. He's a bald-headed guy, very knowledgeable. He used to be at Utah, and now he's at BYU. And all he studies in his lab, he's sort of a metabolic health expert. He studies insulin in his lab all the time. He wrote a book a few years ago called Why We Get Sick. Very good book for those of you that are interested. That ratio, triglycerides divided by HDL, you want that ratio to be less than 1.5. Okay. So in this example, the first example, mm-hmm. we did 50 and 50, we got a ratio of 1 with the ratio triglycerides at 100 and HDL of 50, which 50 for a woman is actually sort of on the lower side.
Depends.
Women usually are even, easily above 50 or 60, but that's still a good example. That if, so 100 triglyceride divided by 50 HDL gives you a ratio of 2. That's above the 1.5. So in that case, what you'd hope to see, right, we'll talk about how you lower them in a second. You'd like to see those triglycerides go down and those HDLs go up. And when someone's becoming more metabolically healthy, meaning more insulin sensitive, that's sort of exactly what happens. Triglycerides go down and those HDLs tend to go up. They've been trying to make a drug, pharmaceutical companies have been trying to make a drug to increase HDL for years, mm-hmm. and they've never really been successful with it.
Exercise will increase HDLs. So that's one thing is weight-bearing exercise. Not so much the biking or the swimming, but something where my body weight is on the ground. That does bring up the HDLs. Estrogen has a direct relationship with HDLs. Yep. So that's why when women go through menopause, sometimes those HDLs can go down. So I would say for Sasha or anybody out there that's saying, okay, what can we do to lower triglycerides, which we'll talk about a bit, is one of the best things to do is raise up your HDLs by doing the exercise.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one thing you have to realize with total cholesterol, that HDLs and total cholesterols are sort of directly proportional. So if your HDL goes up, your total cholesterol goes up, or if your HDL is already high, like my patient that had a number of over 100, that's going to push up the total cholesterol. That's why you can't really pay too much attention to the total cholesterol. Just because your total is elevated does not make you a candidate for statin therapy necessarily. That's why I personally pay more attention to the triglycerides, and really the triglyceride HDL ratio and that number specifically, because that one triglyceride number tells you sort of quite a bit of information.
And like you were saying at the beginning of the podcast, talking about metabolic health and refined carbohydrates, processed foods, sugars. So one of the best ways to bring down triglycerides would be to minimize those.
Yeah, right. Now, what we're
easier
seeing...
Easier said than done.
Yeah, what we're seeing with this semaglutide or semiglutide, those things are having a major impact on these kind of numbers, right? Someone's on... I call it semaglutide. How do you pronounce it?
Semiglutide.
I've heard a few people,
GLP inhibitors.
GLP-1. There's a few different ones, but semaglutide, the Now, granted, if you're not eating, right, you're sort of almost fasting on those kind of medications, automatically there's not as much frequency happening, right? So your blood sugar, you're not eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner, cereal for breakfast, sandwich for lunch, pasta for dinner, carb, carb, carb. That kind of exposure on a regular basis is going to push those numbers up because now your body is having to respond to those high carbohydrate meals. Your fasting insulin starts to rise, and then your triglycerides rise on a, you know, as a result of that. So some of those medications can be highly effective at restoring some of that metabolic health. The only thing, and we'll probably talk more about these later, is make sure that you're prioritizing protein in your meals and to engage, like you said earlier, in some type of strength training activity.
And what about if you were to have a good protein intake through the day that could help reduce down your carb cravings? Because I know when I haven't eaten, and if it's easy to grab some crackers than it is to go, you know, fry up some eggs, get some protein. So maybe trying to, I would say, to help reduce down those triglycerides would be, you know, increasing up your protein and lowering the refined carbohydrates. And I know that sounds so, I don't want to say like infantile or easy or a duh, but it's very hard to do.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, you know, there's a bunch of different discussions about how much protein someone should be eating. The less active you are, the less you need, sort of. But if you just prioritize protein on a daily basis, it's going to create some satiation. So now there's less room in your daily diet for other things. We're recommending for most women, 100 grams of protein a day should be sort of like the standard. Now, if you're 101 pounds, you probably don't need 100 grams of protein. But if you're, you know, average, you know, 135 to 165, you know, easily 100 grams should be sort of your base point, especially if you have high triglycerides and you're trying to lose some weight. Without having to even count calories so much, just prioritize the protein as your main macro, and then you backfill those other parts. Because if you're eating 100 grams of protein, which you're a petite woman, getting 100 grams of protein for you is
almost impossible. I'll admit it. It's very hard for me to do that.
Yeah, but it's pretty tough. But you don't have high triglycerides. You don't have high triglycerides. You're not actively trying to. I mean, everyone's trying to lose weight and whatever, but you're not actively trying to lose weight right now.
Yeah, I have problem areas that I'm working on.
Problem areas. Yeah, we all have problem areas for sure. Triglycerides, I think that it's a little bit of a, I think it's a very telltale test. I don't think it's necessarily, it's not very sexy at all, right? There's nothing sexy about a triglyceride level, but I think it, as the practitioner, it tells you quite a bit, as a person, it tells you a lot of information and gives you something very tangible. Now, from a treatment standpoint, there's a few ways to approach it. Medication-wise, there's a few that are, you know, triglyceride lowering medications. I'm not a big fan of those, because I think this is more of a.
I don't see it really work that well.
Yeah, I've never.
The Lavazza. I haven't really seen it.
Well, I can't remember the name of them right now. But there's a few other ones that are designed for lower. Statin drugs do not lower triglycerides. Statin drugs will lower your total cholesterol and your LDL cholesterol. You and I are not necessarily huge fans of that. Sometimes it's appropriate depending on the person, but not in every case. Lavazza is, that's what you're referring to, Lavazza. Lavazza is a prescription omega-3 fatty acid prescription. I'm not a big fan of that. I just rather have someone do omega-3s. This is the weird part. You take omega-3 fatty acids, which is a fat, to lower your blood fat. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Make any sense.
And gosh, omega fatty acids or omega-3 fatty acids are so great for reducing down inflammation. Yeah. It's so good for so many things that definitely I would say for Sasha or anybody with the triglycerides, thinking about that is increasing up the protein, like we said, and then increasing up her omega-3 fatty acids.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, those two things are, and then like you said, exercise. Mm-hmm. Exercise alone, especially if it's strength training-based exercise or even walking, is going to increase your insulin sensitivity. That's sort of the whole point. That's why those things are effective at lowering triglycerides and increasing HDL. I'm a fan of the omega-3s. We are all kind of lacking sources of omega-3 fatty acids in our daily diet anyways. And the other lifestyle things. Some supplementation ideas in addition to omega-3s, niacin can be somewhat effective. Yeah. That's sort of like it was really popular when you and I were in school. In the early 2000s, niacin was sort of a thing, and then it sort of just faded away. I just had a patient recently that was using niacin because she's not really a fan of using any prescription. She wanted to do it naturally. And of course, it was time-release niacin, but she was having some flushing with it.
That can happen.
Yeah. When I was in high school, I had a complexion problem. Blemishes and, you know, typical teenage acne. And my dad and I put together like a vitamin protocol to sort of, you know, fix my skin. It actually worked, you know, made some dietary change and took a bunch of vitamins. But I used to get, he would put these little, you know, vitamin bottles together and put them in things and separate them out. I was, you know, 16 at the time. I wanted my skin to be clear, but I wouldn't have the discipline to do all that. So we put them in these little bottles and, you know, there'd be niacin in there, you know, 100 milligrams of niacin. I'd like light up like a Christmas tree. I'd get all red on my neck, my ears, my nose, my face. I didn't mind it so much. I wanted my skin to clear up. So I was willing to do just about anything to do that. So, but for some people, it's not very pleasant, you know, because it's almost like having a hot flash almost.
Yeah. So having it with food, the non-flushing. What about the bergamot? Have you had any good results with that?
Not so much on triglycerides. Certainly berberine. Yeah. So those two bergamot, berberine. Berberine for sure can have an impact on your lipid profile. That's kind of like a nice little cocktail there. Omega-3 fatty acids, berberine, bergamot. You know, that's a nice way to approach someone's lipid panel.
Throw in a little niacin. I completely forgot about the niacin.
Yeah. Niacin's relatively simple and easy. Not too expensive. Like I said, there can be some issues at a higher dose when you're trying to adjust lipid panel numbers like that. I think that's probably why it's kind of gone out of favor. You and I use pretty good doses of vitamins quite often. None of those things typically happen all that often. You don't have to worry too much about that.
And then I would say too, is checking the thyroid, low thyroid, hypothyroid is directly correlated to high triglycerides. So that one patient I was telling you about, her triglycerides do normally run really high. She can get them down with diet and lifestyle, but this last time when it went up, her thyroid had dropped down too, because I manage her thyroid. So I know, when you raise up that thyroid, that automatically will bring down the triglycerides.
Or if you have someone on medication, you start them on medication, their triglycerides don't go down, right? Then you know that it's a little bit more, you know, metabolically driven. It's not from the thyroid. I would say the thyroid part is a little bit more secondary, but you will see if someone's got some sluggish, lipid numbers like that, you put them on a little bit of thyroid and those numbers will drop, 20-30 points.
Catching if someone's hypothyroid, if they haven't been looked at. So that's one other thing.
Yeah. So, lowering triglycerides, I think it's very important, relatively easy in theory, right? It's just sort of removing some of those refined carbohydrates, and it can be done fairly easily through, a little bit of, exercise and some targeted, supplementation. But other than that, it's something I think should be prioritized because it has some long-term implications to it. Like I said, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, and cancer, those are all related to having higher insulin levels. And if your triglycerides are high, then we can make the assumption, that's the whole point behind that test, that your insulin is starting to creep up a little bit. Insulin should be ideally less than 7 on a fasting blood draw. If your insulin's in the double digits, or if you have something like high blood pressure is also sometimes one of the first warning signs that you are insulin resistant. So
would you say, for Sasha or somebody, thinking about this, that testing a fasting insulin, or what we've always also talked about is if you've got high triglycerides, kind of borderline high blood sugar glucose fasting, and then a high hemoglobin A1C, I mean, that's like, and then you throw in that insulin, that is a recipe that you're looking at that's going to be going towards diabetes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and now it could be any of those. It could be diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, or cancer. You don't know which one it's going to express as. Okay, that's why those are not, in some ways, they should not be looked at as being separate problems. They should all be looked collectively of having the same root cause of being insulin resistant. And that's why by taking care of that one, core issue, in some ways, you're sort of preventing disease down the future. Right. So that's what we try to do with our patients. We try to get them feeling better through hormones, getting their sleep better, getting their hot flashes and night sweats under control. But now they are metabolically becoming more healthy over time. And you're preventing disease. So there's a short-term component to it, and there's a longevity component to it. So that way we can sort of stave off some of that, age-related problems over the years. So, I think that's a, like I said, a little bit of a, tongue in cheek there. It is, it, she mm-hmm. says it's not a hormone problem, but it technically is very much a hormone problem. So, you know, thanks for Sasha for, you know, sending in the question.
Yeah. Actually, if anybody listening or you're new to our podcast or new to our YouTube channel, you can go to our website, progressyourhealth.com, and we have a little tab that says Ask the Doctor, and then you can ask your question.
Yeah, that's where these questions are coming from. Now that we're on YouTube, of course, you're watching the video. Down below in the comments, you can write a video down, or you can write a, excuse me, you can write a comment down below the video. You know, that's another way for you to connect and ask your questions. And
but if you go to Ask the Doctor, we do change everybody's name, so if you just want to stay a little bit more anonymous that way.
Down in the comments, you might not be, you know, whatever your username is on YouTube, you might not be able to have any anonymity. But if you go to the website, that way there's, you know, you can, we won't share your any of your information on there. Because some of these questions, now this one certainly is not triglycerides, there's nothing sensitive about that. But, you know, with women's issues, you know, there's things that come up, they might not feel comfortable putting that in a YouTube comment for everyone to see it.
That's true.
Yeah. So, anything else to add about Sasha's triglycerides?
No, I think this is great.
Yeah, okay. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.